No wires. No wires. What is going on here? We are really excited to announce, in addition to iBook, Airport Wireless Networking.
Hello, and welcome to the CoCast, the best 30 plus minute app conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Aaron Elijah. I hear Leander chewing in the background every once in a while. He receives a gift and a handwritten note from the Johnny Ive. You know, no big deal. Leander Caney is here.
Hello, Evan.
Hello. Also joining us, he's left running Cult-O-Mac while Leander's off gallivanting with Johnny, Bob Mansfeld, and his other famous friends. Lewis Wallace is here.
Hey.
What's up, Lewis? Good to have you back.
Yes, it's a wonderful day.
It is a good day. I appreciate your enthusiasm. And Buster, he's on vacation. He's off taking a well-deserved break. He went to Chicago. He went to Missouri. I guess he's going to Missouri. So I fully expect there to be at least several Bigfoot sightings in those areas. You see a incredibly hairy, fully upright animal walking through the wilderness completely nude. Don't be alarmed. You've probably just spotted Buster Hyde. It's cold in Chicago, too. I've only been to Chicago twice, and it was cold as ice. Have you guys ever been there?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Ridiculous, man. And the wind over there?
Yes, sir.
Is it always windy like that?
That's why it's called the Windy City.
Not really.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
That's not why they call it that.
What?
Yeah, isn't the Windy City like a political reference?
Yes, it's politics.
Is it really?
Yeah, what does that refer to, actually, Lewis?
I think just, people flapping their lips, gassing, it is windy there. Lake effect, all that, it gets cold, for sure.
Yeah, man, that wind is just unreal. Like, I was walking through the city, and it was just like nonstop, just blowing right in your face. And it's cold there already. I don't know how the people over there stay warm. They got to wear, like those burglar masks.
Keep moving. Don't stand still.
Of those cars frozen on the lake, they park cars on the side of the lake and leave it overnight, and then in the morning they're all frozen. They're all covered in frozen
ice. Is that in Chicago?
Yeah, that's some amazing pictures from last year.
Huh. Is that in Chicago? I thought those pictures were for like Norway or something.
I thought it was Chicago, but I could be wrong.
Okay, well, clearly we're not climatologists here. Well, it's one of my favorite times of year. It's Thanksgiving for those of us in the U.S. Happy Thanksgiving to everyone in the U.S. We're heading into the holiday season, and you guys know what that means. It's time for one of Tim Cook's epic Thanksgiving feasts, Leander. And I heard that this year Johnny Ive was going to be cooking the turkey.
Oh, yeah?
And he, he's such a minimalist. What he does is he just lightly dabs the turkey with a wet paper towel, and then he just brings it to the table. Doesn't cook it.
Sushi turkey.
And then, of course, Tim Cook, being the consummate host that he is, he grabs the sides for everyone. He very delicately slices the turkey pieces for each and every person, and then, before everyone begins, he very gently, almost quietly says, "Gobble, gobble, y'all." And then the feast begins, and everyone gets mad at Bob Mansfield for eating all the rolls. It's going to be a great feast over at Tim Cook's house, and I'm excited to eat some turkey myself. Let's start with this bit of news. Apple has teased their big Black Friday event, and I think this is probably one of the biggest ones we've ever seen. Word on the street is they are going to give you a $10 iTunes gift card if you buy a MacBook Pro.
$4,500 MacBook Pro. Right?
If you buy the Mac Pro, you will get the same gift card and a pair of ear pods. It's going to be a massive event. But seriously, Apple does the lamest Black Friday events on the entire internet, don't they?
Yeah, yeah. They're, well, they don't like to discount. Bad. They never got nothing, you know, they don't put anything on sale, do they? So
no, they don't. And last year they didn't even do a Black Friday.
I was gonna
event.
Say, yeah, better than nothing, right? There was nothing last year.
That's right. You get what you could take, you plebes. If you're thinking about buying a MacBook Pro, if you're thinking about buying any Apple product, I mean, at least you're getting some kind of discount, because like you said, Leander, they never do discounts of any kind. I mean, the best discount you get all year is probably the back-to-school event, which not everyone can qualify for, in which case you might get like a gift card or some piece of technology, you know, along with your MacBook purchase. But in any case, you are getting something, and although we don't know exactly what Apple will be handing out for free this year, keep your eyes on Apple.com on Friday on Black Friday to see what the deals are. Just to give you some historical context, in 2014, Apple did a Black Friday where they gave away gift cards with certain purchases. Customers buying a Mac got a $150 gift card. You could get a $75 gift card with an iPad, a $50 gift card with an iPod, and so you might get something along those lines this year. And hey, it's better than nothing. You know, I almost forgot, Leander, before we continue, did you have anything you wanted to promote this show?
Oh,
I completely forgot about it.
Well, you know, since it's Thanksgiving, people might be interested in our free ebook.
Yeah,
about using your iPhone and your Apple Watch to get fit. You know, we've talked about this before. It's actually a really, really, really good piece of work from Graham Bauer. He's an app developer out of the UK. He is a fitness fanatic. He had cancer, and after he survived it, he decided to get fit. You know, he had the classic dad bod, middle-aged.
He was sexy.
No, well, not the...
you said right, dad
exactly.
bod, right?
I saw you right, exactly, yeah. He was sexy. Now he's all kind of too skinny and too muscular.
Yeah, he's just gross. He looks, gangly. Yeah,
right, it's not very nice
he's
at all.
He's got muscles everywhere,
he,
gross.
He looked better, right, when he had 40 pounds of extra fat on him, like me. But so he got fit using his iPhone, and he's really, really into this. In fact, he just wrote a fantastic review of the Apple Watch for running. 3,000 words, the most comprehensive review of the Apple Watch Series 2 for running, pretty sure. I haven't seen anything like it. He also, you know, a couple of weeks ago, he did one for swimming. And he was swimming in open water. He was swimming in swimming pools. He did all kinds of, like, he really put this, I mean, he's working on this for weeks. He really puts this thing, you know, the watch through its paces. And these reviews are great. And anyway, he's been writing for us for, like, a couple of years now. And he put a lot of his columns and adapt them into this free ebook, which really is a nice piece of work. It's really, really good. And, you know, given this time of year when we're going to be putting on a few pounds, you know, people might be interested in taking a look at this. It's a free ebook. All you got to do is go to the site. We'll put a link in the show notes, and you can download this this book for free.
This is a good time of year to grab that ebook too. Have you ever noticed that, like, when you go into a Costco this time of year, Costco is like a mega store for those who don't have them in their countries that sells everything. Have you ever noticed, like, they put all the vitamins and fitness products at the front of the store when you walk in? Just
and the
wait.
Booze.
And the booze?
Yeah.
Oh, our Costco doesn't sell booze. Oh, no, I take that back. They do sell booze now. It used to be illegal in this state. But yeah, everyone's trying to get fit this time of year. So so grab the ebook. We'll link to it in the show notes. And if I may, I want to give everyone an opportunity to own a piece of Cultcast history. That's right. I don't think that's hyperbole either. Some of you may know several years ago, gosh, probably like 5 years ago, I launched a company called Might Tees. We sold these really artful, cool graphic t-shirts that were heavily Apple inspired. So there's some great Steve Jobs ones, there's some good Steve Wozniak ones. We got Star Trek, we have Star Wars. And actually our Apple t-shirts are what got me connected with Cult of Mac, and what led me to be introduced to Leander Caney. And I mentioned, I think two or three shows ago, that it's been a while, you know, I haven't really been giving Might Tees any attention, and I've been trying to wind it down, and now's the time. I'm winding it down for good. And if you go to mighttees.com, that's mighttees.com, check out what we have available there. You can save 60% off any order. And it takes the price of the t-shirts down from like $28 to about, I think, $11 and some change. So we're practically giving them away for the price that we paid for them, just so I can you know, liquidate everything, close my teas down. And it is truly a piece of cult cast history. And so I want to invite everyone, if you if you're looking for some cool gifts this year, if you like Star Trek's Star Wars Apple, you know, theme stuff, check out MikeTees.com. Use code CULTCAST at checkout, and you will get some great T-shirts for a insanely low price, lower than we've ever offered before. And it's they're only available while supplies last. We're not reprinting any of these things. So once something sells out, it is going to be gone forever. They're not available anywhere else. MIGHTTES.com. Let's talk about the airport, the Apple Airport Extreme router, the time capsule. We got some news this week from Bloomberg that Apple has disbanded the division that is working on the routers, and the product line will be no more, which was disappointing to me. And actually, Leander, I think you called this several shows ago. We were talking about this exact same topic, about how it seemed like Apple might be moving away from areas of the business that aren't creating a huge amount of profit for them. Do you remember this right. this conversation?
Yeah, yeah. Johnny I sent me a note, said they listened to that podcast, and after hearing it, it was like, yeah, you're right.
This was it handwritten? It was a handwritten note, I'm sure. It was handwritten, it wasn't even
yeah.
an email.
Right, yeah, yeah. It was handwritten on his embossed paper.
with the Johnny I family seal, of course. Right. That's how you knew it was authentic.
Right.
And here we are. And they're doing it. And, you know, this raises so many questions for me. I mean, A, what's going to happen to Time Machine, right? Time Machine right. is the backup application built into OS X. I use Time Machine. Do you guys use Time Machine?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm assuming that Time Machine is going to be no more. I mean, how can they do Time Machine without
a dedicated thing? Well, you yeah. can. It detects, you know, when you plug in a hard drive, and it says, do you want to use this as a backup? So I guess, you know, what they'll want people to do is to plug in. If you want to have a centralized Time Machine backup, you'll just have to plug in a drive into your router.
Can you plug a drive into most routers and have it work that way?
I believe so.
And so you just have to have a network drive available.
Yeah, and I don't know whether a Time Machine auto detects a network drive. It definitely does it with a local drive. Like if you plug in a drive into a, you know, a Mac, it pops up a notice saying, do you want to use it as a Time Machine backup? And I'm not sure if it works for the network drive. But
see, I don't think that it does. I was trying to use Time Machine with a network drive before, and what I discovered is you can only do Time Machine wirelessly if you have a time capsule. So maybe Apple's going to be changing their position on that. Otherwise, you would have to have a drive plugged in directly to your computer. And who's going to do that with a laptop? That's so inconvenient.
Yeah, yeah, right. Well, what I'm using Luma, and mm-hmm. I was using Eero before, which is, you know, they're these new mesh network routers. They come in pack of three, and it uses mesh networking. You put one at the, you know, the, upstairs, one in the basement, or, you know, I have it at the front of the house, one in the middle, one at the back. And the three of them work in concert. They create a mesh network, and they really blanket the whole place. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to keep Time Machine. So I went into Time Machine and I turned off Wi-Fi, and I just plugged it into the back of one of the routers, and it still functions as my Time Machine backup drive.
So it is working for you.
It works fine. Yeah.
Okay. So maybe that was a change that they made. Because I tried this a couple years ago and it didn't work for me, and that's what ended up, you know, that's why I ended up buying a time capsule, is because it wouldn't work any other way. So maybe Apple's changed their position on that. So you think that Time Machine will still stick around? It just won't be, you know, exclusively tied to the time capsule.
Yeah, you know, maybe they'll do a deal, you know, like they did with LG to make the monitors. Maybe they'll do a deal with one of the manufacturers to offer something.
Yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I hope so. It was a great system when it, you know, a few years ago when it debuted. Mm-hmm. I mean, a really, really great system, you know, having integrated backup into your Wi-Fi. I mean, really nice, really elegant, really easy to use, pretty reliable. Usually, sort of, kind of.
It's been rock solid for me. I know it hasn't been for you, but yeah, it's been for me this entire time that I've owned it.
Yeah.
Well, we got an interesting comment on this post on Cultimac from Alan Armont. And he said this was to be expected. Obviously, they are working on the Google Home competitor, which will include all of the airport features. No need to panic. I actually thought this was a good point. Maybe they are going to be releasing something like this in the future that will have time capsule, you know, functionality built into it.
Well, they, you know, when they keep it around, though, until they did that, they'd say this is replacing, you know, this old product. I mean, why? Although, actually, they haven't made an official announcement,
yeah,
have they?
Yeah, they haven't killed it.
Yeah, true.
You mean Apple hasn't officially killed the time capsule?
No, this is a report, so.
Right, yeah. This is one of those reports that may end up, it looks like it's going to be true. But yeah, to your point, that was exactly what I thought, is wouldn't Apple release something that replaced it before they just killed it off? And then maybe release a new product further down the road. It seems like they would kind of do those at the same time, so you'd have a new product.
Right, but like Lewis says, they haven't actually officially killed it off. I mean, so they still could do that.
Do you think they're actually going to keep it around?
What, the time capsule?
Yeah. And the airport.
It's really outdated. I mean, this you know, from the first moment I got one of these mesh, you know, the Aero, it was like, oh my God, this is way much better. This is way, way better. Because I tried to use extenders and I tried to use, you know, using an Airport Express router a little as a slave. And you know, I never had any luck with it. And we had a big debate about this, right? You know, some people actually have had a lot of luck and I never did. But this, you know, the Aero and the Luma, which I'm now testing, they're so much better. They're way,
oh, really?
Way better.
So you're having a lot of success with those.
Yeah. They're great. They're really, really great. You know, it's much more robust, much more reliable, and much, much more comprehensive. I mean, that, you know, the Wi-Fi coverage, there used to be all kinds of black spots all over the house. And everyone was always complaining, you know, that they couldn't, the kids upstairs, you know, couldn't get their Xboxes to connect. And then they'd be streaming, they'd be choking up the whole network. You know, like a couple of kids would be like looking at Netflix on their iPads or whatever. And, you know, the whole thing would come to a grinding halt. Yeah, you know, having one hotspot, even a small house like us, I mean, we don't have a big house. It's a pretty small house. And, you know, it just didn't work. It just was not a good, it's just not a good system. And these new mesh networks ones, you know, are much, much better.
It kind of seems like that's where routers are heading, into this whole mesh network.
Right.
You know,
and Lewis has been testing another one too, right, Lewis?
Yeah,
what's the one you're using?
Amplify HD. Yeah, and it's great. I mean, I've never in my life had such, you know, everywhere I go in my house, strong signal, no matter what. It's awesome. I was talking with a guy from Netgear at one of these, you know, pre-holiday event things, you know, where they're talking about the new products. They're coming out with one. And he's basically like, yeah, it's just, there's, it's better, and everyone's going to do it. And it's also more expensive. So, of course, Apple will come up with one.
Well, yeah. Right. I mean, those mesh routers are like $500.
Yeah, there's that.
For the whole system,
there
right?
There is that. Yeah, yeah.
That's ridiculous. That. Like, a lot of people are still buying, like, the WRT54G, which is, like, a router from that was popular in 2005 and doesn't even do, like, 802.11ac or anything. I mean, that is still, like, one of the most popular routers out there. Right. People don't want to spend money on routers. That thing is, like, $50.
Yeah.
How are you going to get people to spend $500 on a router?
Right, true.
I'm a router nerd. I love routers. I used to install my own operating systems on routers. You know, like, open...
Wow.
Like,
flash them?
Yeah, I would flash them with new operating systems. And even I don't want to spend $500 on a mesh routing set. That's way too much money.
It is. Yeah. Well, the Luma's $300. It's $299,
uh-huh.
And you get three routers in that. And it's. I think it. Well, actually, you know, I was going to say it was good, as good as, if not better than the Aero, which is another two. You know, which is $499.
Mm-hmm.
But Aero just updated their software. Which I think makes it a lot more robust. They're offering, what do you call it? Priority devicing.
Oh, sorry.
Priority streaming.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have a device, you know, if you're doing a Skype call or something like that, you can prioritize that traffic, which is a really nice software update. Or if you're trying to watch something, you know, some HD stream, some 4K stream on Netflix or something like that, you can prioritize that stream, and it'll downgrade all the other traffic. So that looks like a pretty nice feature. They're both really, really good, though. I mean, they do all sorts of, you know, auto correction. They look out for interference and you know, other problems, streaming problems, and keep optimizing the whole network to give you the best bandwidth throughput that you can get.
I'm really bittersweet on this whole Apple killing off their routers, but hearing you describe these new technologies. This is one of the reasons why I think it's probably a good idea for Apple to do this, because they have several devices out that are just kind of floating out there, and they're just not doing anything with them, and they're languishing, and it seems like Apple's never going to update them. And the Airport Express, the Airport Extreme, is one of those devices that Apple. I don't know why. Maybe they don't have the resources to devote to these products, or maybe it's just because these products don't make them very much money. And these devices just aren't as good as they can be. And you have companies out there like Eero putting out, you know, like novel, innovative new products. And so maybe it is better that Apple just gets out of these kinds of markets.
You know, I mean, I want to say that this is a sign that they're concentrating on other stuff, that they're putting their resources somewhere else. I think this and the Macs, the fact that the Mac Pro hasn't been updated, you know, the fact that the MacBooks were really laggy in their updates, the Mac Mini hasn't been updated, the iMac has only been sort of spec bumped. I mean, I think all of this stuff is signs that they're devoting resources to something else behind the scenes.
Oh, really? Is that what you think?
I think, yeah, for sure. Because they said the same thing when they developed the iPhone. You know, I mean, like, the company is very, very disciplined, very, very, you know, they're always really good at keeping on top of updates, keeping on top of technology, you know, being putting out constant hardware and software updates. And they were worried, you know, they were worried about the iPhone because it was unproven. It was really a leap in the dark. And what they were worried about was actually not being able to update all their products for 2 or 3 years. On a regular basis, and actually sort of, you know, putting the company in jeopardy because they were going to be neglecting it. And I think that's what's going on now.
So they would have to be working on something huge.
I think so, yeah.
I mean, look at what's happening with the Macs. The Macs haven't been updated in forever. The Mac Pro especially, and actually I was kind of wondering if they're just going to cancel the MacBook Pro or the Mac Pro, right?
I think they effectively have, really, haven't they, right? It's just sort of sitting there. You know, it hasn't been updated since it came out, what, three years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they've effectively, you know, put it.
I mean, if they're willing to cancel products that aren't making them a ton of money and move on and focus on other things, I mean, why wouldn't they cancel the Mac Pro? I mean, they did it with the XServe, remember, years ago. They canceled those because they just realized they weren't a big part of their business.
Yep.
And maybe the Mac Pros just aren't a big part of their business anymore. I mean, Apple says they're focused on pros, but I kind of wonder. I think they're focused on prosumers, like, and so creating actual pro products may not be a focus of theirs anymore. And so why not just get rid of it and put their focus onto, you know, more iPhones, which is what makes their money.
The iPad line, you know, has been reliably updated, and you can see they're doing stuff in the iPad line. You know, they have the Pencil, they have the new charging port. You know, they've been updating the iMac line. The iPad line and the iPad Pro, and you know, I think that they are pushing that as the platform of the future. You know, that's where the future lies. You know, the Mac is a legacy platform.
Oh, don't say that.
I hate it to say it, but
that's horse hockey. Excuse my language. I apologize. Well,
you know, I think
it's not a legacy platform. They are never going to get rid of the Mac in lieu of the iPad. Do you really believe that's going to happen?
Well, not soon, but I think the writing is on the wall.
I don't see that writing. It must be that kind of writing that has disappearing ink. I don't see it. I think the Mac's going to be around forever. I don't think that those two platforms are similar in any way.
Well, no, exactly. But I mean, no, you know, they're keeping it around. But for things like professional work, yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, like, there's a lot of the iPad isn't quite there, and may not be there for another couple of years. But I think, you know, there is going to be a point within a year or two when the iPad, I think, will do every single thing that you could do on a pro machine, you know, on a pro laptop or even a pro desktop. Everything you'll want to do, you'll be able to do on an iPad.
The input mechanisms of a Mac on your iPad. You would need a mechanical keyboard, a physical keyboard.
Would you? Why would you?
Because typing on a software keyboard is not nearly as fast or as accurate as using a real keyboard. Do you guys disagree?
Well, you can already use a keyboard with an iPad.
Well, yeah, you can. That's what I'm saying, is you would need to get a physical keyboard. You might even need to have a mouse. Because, you know, Phil Schiller even said they were investigating touchscreen Macs and they didn't work. So what you're talking about, Leander, is a touchscreen Mac, essentially.
No, it's an iPad, but it's like, the limitations, I think, of the iPad is the operating system, is iOS.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a multitasking environment. That's the main advantage, I think, of the Mac, is that you can have all kinds of windows open. You can easily switch between them, between different applications. You'd be working on a whole bunch of different things, you know, on one screen simultaneously. And that's really what you can't do, even with a split screen in iOS. You know, it's a little bit of a half-baked concession to that, right? It's like, you know, they're making it a little bit more multitasking, but not. And I think, you know, there's been calls for Apple to actually split iOS into an iPhone iOS and an iPad OS. And I think that makes a lot of sense. They should have, you know, like a dedicated iPad OS that does does a lot of things. You have to turn to for a Mac right now, which is basically multitasking, having multiple windows from multiple applications open at the same time.
And you would need access to like a file system.
Well, you can do that, can't you? I mean, you do kind of have, you know, like they've opened that up a little bit. You can kind of a little bit see the file system, right? Especially through some apps.
So you're saying saying that Microsoft had it right. We did a Surface Pro iPad edition. That's essentially what you just said.
I can see it. I can see it, like, you know, to get gaining some more of those features. Yeah, to becoming a little more like this.
I'm not going to argue with you. I think I've made the same argument in shows past, and you and Buster both scoffed at me loudly. I think it would be great to have an iPad that is a little bit more like a Mac, and maybe there's a hybrid OS, or maybe even a mode that allows you to work on it more like it's an actual Mac and not a large iPhone, because a large iPhone isn't conducive to productivity, right? A Mac is. iPhone is for consuming technology or consuming media. Macs are for producing media. There are some exceptions in there, but I think for the most part, that's generally right. And so you would need an iPad to function well in both realms in order to use it as your main machine, I think.
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, you know, like there's some great software on iOS. You know, like I think iMovie is a lot easier to use on iOS than it is on a Mac.
iMovie is a lot easier to use on... Do you really think that? I guess I haven't played with iMovie enough to really know that for sure. I just know, like, if you're using a camera and you're importing media and all that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it was much, much better on the iPad. Much better. Much, much better. It was super easy. Because all the handoff and syncing all of your videos. I shot a bunch of video on my iPhone. It shows up immediately in the iPad. Super easy. It's all right there in iMovie. It was super, super easy to, like, you know, trim clips and to arrange them and rearrange them and to put in some music and put in transition and effects. Super easy. Much, much easier on the iPad than I ever did it on an iMac.
Well, yeah, but you were using your iPhone to record the footage. So all of your footage ends up in photos, right? But if you were using like an actual camera and you had to import that footage into your iPad, I mean, I suppose you could do it. It would just, I feel like it wouldn't be as easy to work with as it would be on your Mac. Maybe I'm wrong. Like I said, I haven't used iMovie on the iPad very much, but for me personally, I would much rather work on a Mac and in Final Cut Pro and even iMovie on a Mac than I think on an iPad, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe in 10 years, we'll all just be using our iPads for everything, especially for photography. Like, I want to see more people carrying around their iPads taking pictures of people, especially at concerts, you know?
Well, you know, for things like, you know, like doing, you know, filling out forms or scanning stuff, I mean, the iPad is a lot easier there than, you know, on the Mac, you have to have a scanner, you have to have, you know, some kind of, you know, a PDF editor. And all of those tasks, you know, like sort of routine business tasks, I think I find a lot easier to do on the iPhone or the iPad.
Yeah, I'm with you there, especially when you're talking about creating PDFs. To your point about having a scanner, I mean, now you can just take a picture of anything and immediately turn it into a PDF.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, everyone has a scanner now in their pocket.
Yeah, right, exactly. And, it took a little while to sort of get used to that, right? I mean, you know, many times I've been asked to sign something and I go, oh, no, I got to go scan it. And I go over to the scanner and I do it on the scanner and I forget that I could just do it on my phone so much easier.
Right. I even have some nice scanners here, and I divert to my phone oftentimes just because if it's one or two pages, it's a lot easier than like breaking out some big scanner. And
yeah, right. Exactly. I finally got used to it, but you know, like a couple of years ago, it was like definitely like, you know, it was a change of your old habits, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's follow up on a story that we talked on last week. This is the Johnny Ive Designed by Apple in California book. Later, you put out what I thought was a great post on Call to Mac, explaining why you thought this book was a nice addition to the Apple, I don't know if ecosystem is the right word since it's not a technology product, but a nice product developed by Apple and, you know, showing their design over the years. And I was actually kind of surprised to see how many people in the comments were kind of pissed off about this book. Did you notice that?
There's been a lot of hand-wringing about it.
Very divisive topic. People were really angry about the price. And I guess I just don't see why people should be so upset. I mean, it's a book. If you want to buy it, you can. If you don't want to buy it, you don't have to. I mean, I totally agree with you. It's a wonderful documentation of Apple's incredible legacy of design history, and it's full of beautiful photography. And why do you think people are getting so angry about it?
Oh, because you know it's that people think it's very precious. You know, at first it's an elite product, right? Isn't it? It's not an easily accessible product for everybody. It's not sort of democratizing technology or.
Which is funny because neither is a MacBook Pro.
Well, you know, they have a range of products, and in general, like you know, one of the things that I think you remember that famous Andy Warhol quote about Coca-Cola, and the thing about the great thing about American capitalism was that. You know, everybody. It was quite democratic. American capitalism, in general, is quite democratic. And like you know, the Coke, a can of Coke. You can see, you know, the bum on the corner would be drinking the same can of Coke that Elizabeth Taylor or the president mm-hmm, would drink. Mm-hmm. And I think Apple, you know, for most of its history, was sort of true to that kind of ethos. That it tried, even though its products weren't always the cheapest. They are sort of generally affordable. The iPhone, you know, great example. One of a piece of incredibly magical technology, and yet largely affordable to most of the middle class of this country, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not the cheapest, but for sure. But you know, somewhat generally affordable. And then you know, this is why the gold watch I think really put people's backs up because it was like, oh, you know, you can go buy you know the sport watch the cheapo aluminum one for $399 or whatever it was, but you know we're going to make a gold watch for the 1%. You know, that cost $17,000 or $25,000. And I think a lot of people saw that as, you know, very, very antithetical to the kind of thing that Apple used to do.
Which is make products for everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And I think the book kind of falls into that a little bit, right? You know, it's seen as a vanity project. Here's, you know, Johnny Ives showing off all the wonderful things he's done. Aren't I great? Aren't I brilliant? And, you know, it's on custom milled paper and in a hand bound linen cover.
I mean, it's a piece of artwork.
Really. Of course, but you know, it's also quite precious. It is pretty precious. It is really pretty precious. It's got no words in it, you know.
And when you say precious, do you mean that in a good way or a bad way? I can't tell.
Well, I can totally see how it rubs people up the wrong way. I mean, it does kind of rub me up the wrong way a little bit too. I kind of agree with the critics.
Really? I couldn't tell from your post and your video praising it.
Well, you know, would I go out and buy this? You know, first of all, my wife would totally skin me alive if I did such a thing, right? And
yeah.
And yeah, you know, like spending $300 of my own money, I'd be like, oh, I don't know, you know, I would definitely have thoughts about it. On the other hand, it is a beautiful book. It, is full of, you know, really fascinating products. And there is some stuff in the back, which tells you a little bit about how they were made, and designed and a little bit of the thinking about behind it. It's a bit technical though. It doesn't really, you know, open it up. And I think, you know, I thought that what it was a way for Johnny Ive to acknowledge the team, the design team, who were basically anonymous. No one knows their names. No one knows what work they've done. They've all been there, since before Steve Jobs came back. They were all going to get canned. They were struggling for years to try to get attention at Apple, you know, but they were sort of seen as an afterthought. They were off campus. You know, Johnny Ive was going to quit. And then Steve Jobs came back and he went over to the studio and he saw all these like crazy experimental prototypes, all of this, you know, really creative and imaginative blue sky thinking that they were doing. And it really opened the eyes, you know, for him. And it was like, oh my God, you know, why are we doing beige, boring beige computers when we could be doing, you know, see-through, bubbly, crazy, you know, Bondi blue iMacs. And the story of Apple in the last, you know, under Steve Jobs' reign was empowering the design department, was making the design department front and center, the idea factory for Apple, you know, which was a 10-year struggle, even for Steve Jobs, because, you know, they were resisted by the engineers, the marketing department, you know, the whole institution was against this. And so that was the story of the design department. And I think they haven't had any recognition. Steve Jobs hogged all the spotlights. You know, all the credit went to Steve Jobs.
He was good at showing up for the photos, huh?
Right, and you know, every time he introduced a product, you know, and it seemed like, you know, at all the presentations that he gave, fantastic though they were, you know, in the public's mind, it was Steve Jobs. You know, the whole company was Steve Jobs. And this is why, and I think this is one of their attempts to gently, you know, claim back a little bit of credit for themselves. And you know, I don't think there's anything really wrong with that.
Was it you that was saying you thought that this was a tribute by Johnny Ives to Steve Jobs?
Yeah, I think that was, where did that line come in that you put in? Was that in the comments or me?
I don't know. I don't know if it was you or if it was somebody else.
But I think it was. It's definitely the sentiment is exactly right. It's true. That's exactly what I think. Yeah, it is. It's a tribute to his work with Steve Jobs.
Because some people were also saying that this might be Johnny Ive's last project at Apple, and that he's kind of on his way out, and this was a statement of the breadth of work that he's had since he's been there, and this kind of draws his career to a close there. Well, do you think he's leaving?
No, not at all. I don't think there's any evidence for that. I don't think there's any evidence for it whatsoever. I mean, he's been kicked upstairs to this very privileged position now as chief design officer. He basically doesn't have anyone that reports to him directly, as far as I know. So he's been freed of all of his sort of administrative and managerial duties at Apple. But he still has a C-level position. And he oversees, you know, like all of the design work that the company is doing, and so he's been spending, from what I can tell, a lot of time at the spaceship, you know, working on the spaceship campus, which is a gigantic project, and on the stores, you know, they've been redesigning all the stores around the country and having a new layout for the flagship stores, and you know, there's also a giant project in the background that, you know, for many years working on something that he actually wanted to do when he went to design school, which is design cars.
And you think they're still putting a lot of resources on the car project?
I think so. Yeah, I don't think. I think so. I think so. I think for sure. Yeah. And I think at one point they're trying to industrialize it. It's not at the prototype stage. It's at the stage where they're trying to actually make a product, figure out how to make a product. So yeah, I think it's very advanced, and I think they've hit a few hiccups. And we got all these kind of, you know, these reports when they were developing the iPhone 2 and for the iPod and for every major product they've ever done. It's never easy. There's always a ton of drama behind the scenes. We only ever get to hear about, you know, like it just scratches the surface of what the public gets to hear about until afterwards. But yeah, I think, you know, where else would he go? What else is he going to do? He is in a position that he has always wanted his entire career. He's a design nerd. He loves to design. And now he doesn't have to do any of that pain in the ass administrative stuff. He doesn't have to, like, you know, take care of the department. All he has to do, he's free to scribble in his notebook and design Christmas trees for Selfridges and stuff like that, right? You know, it's like...
He could have an illustrious career as a Christmas tree designer, actually.
Well, he can do whatever he wants. And he's been doing all these projects with Mark Newsom. They did a whole bunch of... They curated a show for Red. They made a camera together for...
Leica,
right. You know, he designed all the tables and chairs at Apple's... HQ. I mean, he might have done that years ago. I mean, you know, but he's always loved to create stuff, right? So he loves to create and design and make things and spend time in factories and figure out how stuff is made. I mean, he really geeks out on that stuff. So
it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, instead of designing iPhones and computers now, he's designing the actual look and feel of Apple. I mean, with the headquarters and the stores and the tables and the chairs and all that stuff. I mean, that entire project is an extension of Johnny Ive's personality and design capabilities.
And Steve Jobs said, you know, the most important product that Apple ever, you know, that he ever made at Apple was Apple itself, the company. And I think, yeah, where would he go? What else would he do? I mean, there's no company on the face of the planet that would offer him such resources. Plus also, you know, influence. I mean, you know, where else is he going to go to be able to... So you want to put a mark, to put a bit of dent in the universe.
Right.
Samsung?
Well, they would hire him.
They would in a heartbeat,
they would pay
sure,
him
but,
anything he wanted. I mean, he could live like a sultan.
He
could do anything he wanted at Samsung. They would pay him. There'd be no end to the amount of money they would give him.
Right.
Well, let's wrap up with this story. Speaking of Johnny Ive designing Christmas trees.
Oh, my God.
Johnny Ive, he and Mark Newsom have... previously designed Christmas trees, and they just designed another one, and people have been making fun of it, but I actually thought this looked beautiful and serene, and it was like a whole, it was like a Disneyland, you know, like when you're inside the ride, but you're not at the ride itself yet. It's like the environment inside. Did you see the picture of this thing, Leander?
I'm just looking it up now.
Okay. So
I saw some earlier, I think, but I couldn't remember.
of course, it has absolutely no ornaments on it at all. It's just a Christmas tree bare against a white backdrop. Exactly what you would expect from Johnny Ive, right?
No USB ports.
There's no
Ethernet port. No,
but
headphone
there are
jack.
Several USB-C ports on it, Lander.
Oh, okay.
There's exactly three on each side.
They're hidden in the stump.
And at first I thought, of course, this is exactly what Johnny Ive would create. But when you see the picture of it, and we have it linked in the show notes, I think it's beautiful. It's like this... it's like this dramatic scene from like a forest, and it's in this big blue room. And there's all these other trees around it. And then through the trees, there's like this Jacob's ladder light shining through them all and shining on this one Christmas tree that has no ornaments on it at all. It's simple. It's beautiful. And I thought it was just an incredible piece of design. And yet again, shows exactly, you know, why we think Johnny Ive is so talented. You'll probably all disagree with me. You'll think it looks just like a tree.
But it's the essence of a tree. It's the most purest
exactly.
expression of, you know, arboreal purity that the world has ever seen.
Arboreal purity. I cannot describe it any more succinct way. It's not arboreal all, like, purity.
And it's not all junked up with a whole bunch of disgusting, you know, gaudy
streamers and all that other crap.
Baubles.
Apple's redesigned the tree again. Arboreal purity. Okay, well, with that, let's go ahead and wrap it up there. That's all the cult cast we have for you guys this week. I hope everyone is having a wonderful Thanksgiving. This has been the Cultcast, the best 30-plus minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of Cultcast come out every Thursday night. We want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you guys next time. Time to get our gobble on. Double gobble, y'all. Who doesn't like a good goblin?
A good goblin Thanksgiving, yeah.
Man, best time of the year.
And there's some nice stuff, you know. I mean, there's some weird stuff too. I mean, we're trying to get this company in France to send us these weird snakeskin bands, and we've got a kangaroo band.
It's made out of kangaroo skin.
Kangaroo skin, yeah. And you know, oddly, it's you know, I don't know how that kind of stuff is going to go down, but it's actually really it's really soft. It's actually really nice leather.
It's made from the inner lining of the kangaroo's pouch.
Right, yeah, from a Joey, yeah. From a little cute Joey.
That's right. Do you like kangaroos as much as I do? Well, we killed one and made a watch band from it.
Lander,
yeah.
I just had the idea, man. You got it with each order, you got to give them a package of kangaroo jerky.
Oh, okay.
Yummy.
That's special an bonus.
You should make a spicy version and say it's got a lot of kick.
Hey-o.
Bounce.
Hop to it. Place your order.